Hello and welcome to On Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University. I'm your host, Hannah Stanley, and today's topic is the impossibly lonely work of policing. Before we jump into that, I do want to remind everybody to take a moment and subscribe to this podcast. You can do that, of course, via iTunes, or if you're on WGNplus.com, you can do that with all of our fine podcasts. Now, on to our topic of the day, the impossibly lonely work of policing. With me is Karen Cook, Director of Adler's Masters in Counseling, specialization in forensic psychology program, but she's also a former police officer herself, and she's here to shed some light on the stressors and trauma that come with the job of policing, as well as some isolating aspects of its culture. Karen, thank you so much for coming in and being with me today. Now, you've said that the nature of police work is inherently stressful and traumatic. Give us a couple of reasons behind that.
Well, first, thank you, Hannah. I'm glad to join you today. I think the vast majority of calls that police officers do respond to, something bad usually happens. And even if you're just there to help, you're interacting with people who are either scared, have some difficulties, or overly stressed, and police officers absorb all of that kind of stress. We're also trained to be alert for any potential danger to ourselves or others, including the people we're responding to their call for service. It's a dangerous job. We need to be ready to defend ourselves any second. For example, a routine traffic stop can turn into a gunfight, and you're not suspecting that, but you become part of it. And that's what I think leads to our hypervigilance, which that's really difficult to turn off. Yeah. Even when you're not on duty. Another thing that adds, I think, to the stress that we experience is our shift work. We're, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365, and that really undermines a lot of relationships. It undermines our sleep, and especially for the newer people, I think they encounter a lot of isolation from family and friends just in getting used to the rigid work schedule. You miss a lot of important family and social events, so it adds, again, to that separation. And in addition, anything that we do that goes to court also requires that not only may have worked all night and then have to appear in court and we're tired, but we'll have to go to work the next night, the next shift, and we're scrutinized in court. Even though our very best interest is, to serve and protect, we're always under scrutiny, and that certainly adds to stress. I think also socially, even when people know you're in law enforcement, they'll often project their frustration on us, and they'll be asking questions about tickets they received or want you to explain to them another officer's decision, and we don't have the facts, so we don't feel comfortable doing that. There's also the weight of knowing that everything you respond to impacts people, and it impacts their community. And so, whether it's just the initial safety of everybody there, or in the long term, the trajectory of having to have someone leave their family, leave their community, go to jail for a decision that they have made. And over time, that just elevated stress can lead to a lot of physical and psychological distress. And then we start to see the baseline of what it's like for law enforcement officers. So it's a challenging profession.
All right. So thank you for giving us such a good overview, broad stroke overview of the stressors that are involved. Tell us a little bit, if you will, about the impact of compounding that stress that's just day-to-day part of the job with trauma that could be a part of the job.
I think trauma is part of the job, and it's inherent, and especially in a big community city like Chicago, there's always an opportunity for something that's traumatic to occur while you're working. We have to deal with, people's lives when they're not in their best condition, gruesome details of our work, looking at bodies, collecting evidence, announcing to others that, someone they love is not returning home. Fatality accidents, especially difficult, are when you see the young children murdered and people just beaten beyond recognition. I mean, it's just the worst of humanity, and you have to absorb that. I think it becomes a burden because we really don't talk about it. You know, you don't want to be going home scaring your families with the details of what you've experienced that day, and so you absorb it. And yes, we might talk among ourselves, but never in terms of, wow, that was really depressing, or I'm so angry. How can people do that to each other? Because then people begin to think, ah, you're getting weak. You know, can I count on you for a backup? What the department will say, and we're always worried about, you know, someone misjudging us is not fit for duty. So I think sometimes we do turn to lesser appropriate coping mechanisms of, you know, joining the crew for a few beers after work or whatever, and then it can become a problem because you're using maladaptive coping means, even though you know they're maladaptive. It just minimizes that psychological burden that you're carrying from the intense trauma that you experience on the job. And I think overall, our sleep disturbance is always there, always, always, always. And so sometimes it is, you know, the sleeping pills to come home to sleep to get ready to go to the next shift. And that isolates us from our family and friends. And it can lead to a lot of divorce and suicide within our field. We view as psychologists that this is really, really an experience of trauma and violence in the workplace, critical incidents that occur in the workplace, and could be vicarious trauma. So the real impact of that, if you have to defend yourself on the street, if you shoot and kill another person, no matter how justified that is, there's a big price to pay, and it's going to affect the rest of their life. I think officers always feel guilt. We're there to serve and protect. We then go under intense scrutiny by our departments and by the public, especially in social media, as you know. And regardless of circumstances, our family is going to be impacted as well as our community because there will be lawsuits filed against us. Mm. And the trauma doesn't go away. PTSD, vicarious trauma, it's there. And it stays with you. And there are very few resources for officers to cope. So for many reasons, this can really ruin an officer's career. And it's sad because we really are dedicated to our communities and to serving our public.
Okay, we're going to, I have so many questions, but let's shift gears just for a moment. Earlier you said that you, the police and the officers don't feel like they can talk to their family, so they keep that within. But they also don't necessarily talk to each other. You alluded a little bit because they don't want to appear weak or unfit, but are there other reasons behind that?
I think when we do speak with one another, it's It does seem supportive in the moment, but it's always negative, and that's not helpful. Negative thinking leads to a lot of other negative thinking. Our families are already worried about our safety, so we don't want to go home and unload on them. And we as fellow officers depend on each other for our safety to get home every day to our families. So if telling another officer, you know, I'm really despondent or I'm feeling, you know, not myself, it's going to undermine the relationship because nobody wants to be the weak link. Nobody wants to be in fear of not being considered one with the team, with the other officers. There are efforts that officers have made with peer support groups and certainly our Chicago Police Survivors, but departments in and of themselves don't really support a lot of that. I think there are movements within the International Chiefs of Police, the Illinois Chiefs of Police, to provide more psychological services, and certainly those of us that have been there, done that, are available and willing. But there's still a stigma about going. It's, you know, how will this impact my career? Will I be sent for a fitness for duty? Will I lose my career? So that there's a lot to think about in terms of seeking assistance.
Now, that was actually the primary question I wanted to ask before we went into this topic, because, and forgive me for alluding to television and movies, but that it always seems to be very stigmatized. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to have to go to psych. I don't want mm-hmm. to have the eval. I don't want, you know, all they want to do is get through the therapy and the counseling so they can get back to duty.
Yes.
And that is not fake. That's pretty
real.
Accurate.
That's real, yes.
And they don't, frequently they don't seek counseling on their own, privately?
Some will, some won't, but you won't know who does.
Of course, because that would all be very...
It's the confidentiality. That's a critical piece of our work. We're public servants. We're always apparently in the news all the time now, and people make mistakes. But to seek therapy means worrying about your promotion, worrying about your career, worrying about your working alliance with other officers. So should you seek counseling, it's always the concern about confidentiality, this being kept confidential.
So within the ranks, it could be considered as a weakness.
Yes.
Whereas many in the public and the general public would consider it a strength. To be seeking assistance and help.
Yes.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Thank you, Karen, so much. Karen Cook, of course, joining me today for this first topic on social health and change. When we come back, we're going to talk with another Adler professor with inside knowledge of Chicago Police Department's administration to explain the difficulty in changing policies that might improve the situation. You are not going to want to miss that. And to prevent you from missing it, make sure that you subscribe at WGNplus.com or right where on your iTunes, anywhere that you download your podcasts. Again, we will be right back on Social Health and Change. I'm Hannah Stanley.